apparently we've covered that pretty good.
Yeah, but, back on the historic sites for just a moment. You say the federal government is planning a $10 or $15 million program
that's
on restoration,
right,
over
and
a period of
years.
Of years.
To gradually restore the community. Mm-hmm. I should say these specific buildings to the same way, same condition and the same type of architecture, etc., as they had in the early days. And they do everything right down to the finest point. For example, the lights in the Palace Grand, you notice that with these old Mazda-type lights, well, they had to have those specially made. If you go up on one of the balconies, you will find that the struts that hold up the balcony, one of the balconies there, one is a round steel rod, another one is a square steel rod. That's exactly the way it was before they reconstructed it. Yes, everything has to be exactly like, with one exception, and that is matters of safety. They have to have more exits, and they have to have fire. They have it installed with sprinkler systems and stuff like that, you see, which it didn't have in the early days. But apart from these necessary modern-day attitudes, it's just exactly the same as it was in the early days.
When they restored the, or rebuilt the Palace Grand, did they use any of the old lumber in the structure?
I don't think they used any of the old lumber. The lumber was so old. It was originally it was constructed from old scows. So that lumber had seen quite a lot of use and a lot of wear before they even built it.
Before they even got to Dawson?
That's right, and it was mostly spruce, and spruce has a relatively short period of life if it gets any weathering at all.
Yes.
So they had to completely reconstruct the building. They tore it right down and completely reconstructed it, but they had everything just the same as it was before. They took thousands of pictures. They tested the wallpaper. They got everything just as identical as they could, as it was in the days of when Arizona Charlie built it.
Arizona Charlie built it?
Yeah.
I noticed the other
Arizona
the
Charlie Meadows.
That Arizona Charlie Meadows. At the Follies the other night, they said that Klondike Kate had sung on the stage there at the Palace Grand. Klondike Kate, you read about Dawson in the early days, and Klondike Kate doesn't seem to be much of a figure in the Dawson days, through the historical account.
That's,
to read
I think
book,
that's quite correct.
She was quite the girl.
Well, she was
quite. She, do you think she might have been promoting herself more than...
I think she was pretty good at promoting herself. I knew her, you know. She used to come up here in 1938, 39, 40, I forget just when, but at those times I saw her on different occasions. And, of course, she was an elderly lady at that time. But her past history, of course, is... I don't know what's truth and what is fiction. But she was a beautiful girl, apparently.
So many asked me if I knew her. Well, of course, I was just a kid when I was up here, so I wouldn't know her, you know. In the early days.
Well, I only knew her when she came up, and Charlie Matson was mining up there, so I guess she'd come up regularly to get the clean up, eh?
Oh, I imagine.
She did.
Huh?
She did. Well, didn't she marry him?
Yes.
And she'd come up every year to help him in his clean up and then go back to California?
She had her own clean up, I guess, at that time.
George.
He was mining up in 60 Mile, on 10 Mile Creek up there.
Can't you sit down for a minute?
Yes, a tributary of the 60 Mile River. They found him dead in his cabin.
Well, when you came here in 1937, where there's some of the, you know, the glamorous, well-known Dawson figures still living in Dawson City. Like, you know,
no, not the glamorous ones. There were some of the real old timers that had gone through as much as the glamorous ones, but hadn't got as much publicity or notoriety. Mm-hmm. For example, London wasn't here, or a service, or any of those people. But there was old Sam McCormick that had been here hauling in the early days, and Sipkus and the woodcutter, and little Dave Godden, and Doyle that had been here for 50 years. They were actually old-timers, but had reached no fame. But there were still characters, some wonderful old people. There was one old fellow named Fox, R.A. Fox. He wrote a book years ago. I forget the name of it exactly, something about a trip to the planets.
No, life on other planets.
Life on other planets, yes. And it's a published book. And I remember him telling me that there was oil up beyond the Ogilvy Mountains. And of course, I would laugh at that. And yet 15 years later, here comes the oil drilling rigs and going up there and did, in fact, find oil. In fact, I've got some of it here. But he said there was oil up there, and he knew because he'd seen it.
He prospected the country, probably.
Prospected the country. Mm-hmm. And he'd been all over Russia, too, hadn't he? Jerusalem, he was a very well-traveled man, R.A. Fox, Richard A. Fox. Mm-hmm. And he lived in a little cabin on the waterfront.
Did he die here in Dawson?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, he died quite a long time ago.
He called a Sandy on me.
Well, I wouldn't say a Sandy, dear. That wasn't...
Oh, well, you know, he had a box. And it was made of wood from all over the world.
It was olive wood.
And he, in this box, he had a serviette ring, a gavel, that was hand-carved out of the mastodon, with a hand on the handle. And what else was it?
He had a letter opener made of olive wood.
A letter opener. And a letter for me to give this to Christ when he came on earth.
Really?
That was in his will.
That was in his will?
The RCMP brought it down, this box. It was one of these inlaid boxes.
Do you still have the box?
No, I felt the getting older, maybe. I would pass on one of these days, and I asked each one of my girls who would like to look after it, and they just weren't mildly interested. They felt it was sort of a gruesome thing. So, it is in the Christchurch Cathedral Museum in Whitehorse.
In the log cabin church.
They have a church museum there, and I felt that was the place to put it. It would...
So it's been preserved.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some great old timers here.
Yeah.
But the letter is with it, and
well, I'm looking forward to
seeing
that.
So if you ever go there,
yeah,
you can see.
You ask to see that if you go into Whitehorse.
I will. Mm-hmm.
Then there was old Wenzel, Jan Wenzel. He was quite well known in his native, I think, Poland. And he got to the stage of where he was inventing a perpetual motion machine. And he had a small cabin, I'd say about 16 by 16. And this, I used to see him quite regularly. And this machine was taking up about 4/5 of the cabin. He just had room for his stove and his bed. The rest was filled up with this perpetual motion machine. They called him Wenzel the Inventor. His name was Wenzel, Jan Wenzel. And he was quite... well known in his native land, apparently, and quite an eminent scholar. But he came in the early days in the gold rush, and in his old age, he must have been 80 or something like that, he had this perpetual motion machine. And of course, it had stopped at a certain place, so he put weights on another wheel, you see, to keep it going. And it was bound to stop someplace else, and he put more weights on. And each month, this got a little larger and larger until there was room to move in the cabin. Well, then he teared down and started another one. And that went on for years and years and years. That was his whole life. And I always respected it. I never made fun of it. And I was very interested every time I went there. And he'd explain it all to me. And, okay, Jan, see you next month. And off I'd go after half an hour. And he was quite happy. He had an audience. And
whatever happened to his perpetual motion machines?
Oh, I guess that went over the dump. It's just like, there's so many things in this town went over the dump. Today they would, well, they were absolutely invaluable. Mm-hmm. There was a fellow down here named Ellingson. Mm-hmm. He had K cases and cases and cases of these old glass plates. He was a photographer, but he never reached the eminence of some of these, like Larsen Dukas and some of those. And he purchased a lot of these plates or acquired them. And just before he left, he wouldn't sell them to anybody. He said that he never made any money out of it, and nobody else was, and they all went down the dump. Mm. And there were many, many greenhouses that had these old glass plates, and they
paddocks.
Just they scrubbed off the impression that was on there and used them as greenhouse glass.
Oh.
I don't think that there was any period in any history of any country that was so well documented by pictures as was the Dawson, the Klondike.
We're fortunate to have what we have.
And it's just amazing. They keep turning up every once in a while, and I've been collecting them and saving them and sending them to the archives, and they're very good. They send a couple of copies back, and I give them to them, put them in the museum and so on. But it's just wonderful that it was so well portrayed for posterity, because we see it exactly as it was.
Yeah. And of course, it was pretty well documented as it happened too.
Yeah.
A lot of it was.
That's right.
Exaggerated.
But
at
you
the
know,
time, but most of a lot of it was pretty well
you know,
documented.
Actually, it doesn't matter how you exaggerate anything. It was almost true as happened in those early days. Some of the things that did actually happen.
I noticed in the parade that there was a scow, original Stampeder scow.
Well, he made that on Lindeman Lake, this fella, you know, and he whipsawed it and made it and came down, just the same as the Stampeders did. It took him a year to do it.
Oh, the fellow who owns it now, did it?
The fellow that had it in the parade, he...
Oh, I see.
According to Howard Firth, he told me that this fellow whipsawed that lumber. He must have had a helper, I guess, in the end of the whipsaw, because...
Mm-hmm.
And built it right there.
This year?
Well, I imagine he started... I think he started last year sometime on the poker.
And did he
finished
use
it this year.
Pitch or spruce pitch?
Well, that I don't know.
Caulking?
But it's supposed to be identical with the...
Are there
I
any,
doubt if he
any,
used
any of the early small craft like that still in existence?
No. They all rotted long ago.
All rotted or torn up and used?
See, they're made of spruce, and spruce doesn't last. If you have a boat and you say it's 10 years old, it's starting to get kind of rotten.
Mm-hmm.
Fur lasts longer, of course, but spruce is...
Well, speaking of characters, what about Black Mike? Did he really come in here in the 1898 or...
That
97, or did he come in later in 1910?
That
or so?
I really couldn't tell you. You know, not being around. I've only known him ever since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
He was an old man when I first came here, and he's an old man now. And I'm an old man too now. So, when he came in, gosh knows.
Yeah.
There are very few now that did come in on the trail in 98. Very few. In fact, I don't know any. Tom Hebert was the last one, wasn't it? He died, he was 100 years of age, or just past 100 when he died. I think his birthday was on August 17th too, wasn't it? And he came from New Brunswick.
And he died here in Dawson?
He died here in Dawson, yeah. He was a wonderful old fella. He went back a number of years before he died, when he was able to get around, back to New Brunswick, but he couldn't stay there very long. He came back here again.
So the guests then in the Pioneer Home here, or you call it the Sunset Home?
There were no 98ers there.
No 98ers there. I saw a couple of Indian ladies yesterday. As a matter of fact, I saw two together and another one who looked to be getting pretty close to 100. Wouldn't you say? That little old lady from Liza, she's from...
Nina Van Viper?
Van Viper, yeah. She's...
Well, she's from the Pelly.
Yeah.
She's from the Pelly.
Yes, well, of course, she might have been here at the time, but she didn't come over the trail. She was here already.
No, I didn't mean over the trail.
Well, that one of the Van Vipers lived in Fairbanks for a long time.
They did,
he had a house there.
Ira? Well, it must have been one of his sons or daughters.
No. See, an uncle of the boy that drove her yesterday.
Oh, that could be, because I remember he was on the Pelly and he died there. Mm-hmm. Or he might have died in Whitehorse, but I mean, he was there ever since I've been in the country and raised his kids. I remember coming on the stage and going past the Van Bibber family. They were a very large family. Mm-hmm. And he was a very handsome-looking man. He had white hair at that time. And they were outside this cabin. It was very clean and very neat cabin. And all the children were outside and, you know, quite well-dressed. Mm-hmm. Not fancy, but, you know, for living out in the woods. And here was a family. It was just like a stepladder going down. There must have been 10 of them. And it was really something to see. And most of the Van Bibbers, if not all of them, turned out pretty doggone good citizens. Mm-hmm. Because their father and mother gave them a good start.
And this Liza we met yesterday must have been Mrs. Van Bibber.
That must have been the old lady.
Because mm-hmm. she was with her son.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who lives here in...
I don't remember.
Well, most of them live in the Yukon.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one used to live there in Fairbanks, right close to the cemetery, Van Bibber cabin. But I don't think he came up here to Dawson, but he was either in the 40 mile or something. It's like that.
Was that the only time you were willed anything by an old-timer, this box from...
We had the sawmill at the time, and he lived next to the sawmill, and I had no family, and when I made a cake or buns, I always made, and you know, enough so that I could give the old-timer some along the way. And so every time I made a cake, I'd send some down to Grandpa Fox, as we called him, and old Charlie Tennant. And
I remember him. He was a neighbor of ours.
Oh, yeah, old Charlie.
So I suppose he didn't know who to give this box to. He picked on me, but it did give me a bit of a jolt, you know. Because it was such a strange request. I'd never heard of anyone having a request made.
And you were to give it to Christ when he came on earth. Mm-hmm. And I guess Christ, being the supreme ruler, needed a gavel.
Well, I suppose.
He thought out pretty well, apparently.
And a letter opener and a serviette ring. But it...
It'd be interesting to read this book now, Life on Other Planets, because, you know, they are traveling to other planets now, or at least they got to the moon and they're heading for planets, and it might be amazing. You see, this old fella told me there was oil up in there. Well, they found oil 20 years later.
And he might not be as far-fetched as...
Well, that's what I say. And it's a funny thing. Most of these mines, like Clinton Creek, for example, was found in the early days that asbestos was found there. It was recorded in some of the archaeological books.
But it was never developed. Of course, it was
never developed. It wasn't enough, you see. And it was the stampede first was on Cassiar Creek. It's funny, because Cassiar is the same as a Cassiar in B.C., no relation, it's just a coincidence that there's asbestos on both these creeks, Cassiar in the Yukon and Cassiar in British Columbia.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And but it didn't pan out to be economically feasible to operate. And then some other fellows went on this Clinton Creek, and of course they developed into this Clinton mine. There was one of the fellows in today told me they found fiber 2.5 inches long. Mm-hmm. The other day. Now that's bigger than Cassiar, and Cassiar is about the highest grade there is. That runs about that long. But 2.5 inches fiber, you know, you could spin underwear or anything else for that.
Yeah. Well, then the last of the stampeders you know of the 98 Stampeders, who had lived in Dawson, is gone.
Yes, it's old Tom Hebert.
Tom Hebert.
That was his name.
Hebert.
Hebert. It's H-E-B-E-R-T. That's how you spell it. French origin, must have been. And he was a wonderful old fellow. He mined on Moose Creek, too. That's just on the border, almost between Alaska and Yukon, on the 60-mile road. Dummy West used to mine out there, too. You remember Dummy West safe? It's still there, I guess, eh?
I don't know.
Do you see it yet? No. He had a great big safe. There was a fellow, he was a tinsmith. No, a boiler maker. And I remember he was quite a little deal they had in the early days, you know. These fellas used to get all kinds of jobs, and a lot of them were political, but this, of course, this wasn't political, but he was the boiler inspector, and he was deaf as a doorpost. And I had this sawmill, and I had a couple of boilers in there, so every year these had to be tested. And he'd come down with his big sledgehammer, and by God, he'd really give the boiler a going over. He couldn't hear anything.
No.
So he'd hammer it till he sprung a leak someplace, and then you'd have to buy a boiler from him or pay him to get it fixed up. But he wasn't too hard. I got a fairly light, but usually they tap these things and they hear them. The sound will tell them whether it's in good condition or not. But
yeah.
Dummy West, they called him Dummy West, I guess, because he was deaf. He used to pound the hell out of it with a pretty big hammer. And I was always scared when you got it full of
steam.
You didn't do it. You filled it full of water. They called it the hydrostatic test.
Uh-huh.
And you'd have a pump there, and you'd have to pump it. While you were pumping this up to about 200 pounds pressure, you was hammering hell out of it,
yeah,
hoping to spring a leak someplace in one of the flues. Then there was, you remember Stingle, Joe Stingle?
Yes, I know.
Well, he was the boiler inspector.
Oh.
He got that through a political job.
We didn't have that down in our neck of the woods.
What?
A boiler inspector to come down there and inspect.
Oh,
you didn't, then? No, no. And when the flues were gone, I remember one time Denny, you know, putting new flues in.
Mm-hmm.
That was a job.
Yeah, you got to roll them in.
Yeah. I was there helping.
They never went around to mines, though. It was just commercial boilers, you know, stuff like that in town. Well, they needed them.
Have you noticed much influx of prospectors since the price of gold has gone up this year?
A tremendous influx of staking, but not much prospecting. These people that are coming up and staking ground, a lot of them, they haven't a clue of what it's all about. It's just a claim, so if it's a claim, it's got gold. Whether it's been worked out or not, it doesn't make any difference. They believe in the old adage that gold is where you find it, but there are certain laws that are connected with finding gold. And when a dredge has gone through a piece of ground,
it's pretty certain there's not much
it's
gold.
It's pretty there. Slim pickings, but to them, oh, they might have missed it.
Yeah.
As gold goes down, the enthusiasm, I think, will go down,
gold
too.
Down too.
I don't see any new mines operating as a result of it. Do you?
Just talk.
That's right.
Do you get asked questions here in your shop? Do you have many questions asked about gold mining? Where they
Mine? Everybody is very interested in it. But the interest is waning with the price. See, it's about $94 now.
Exactly.
It was 129 or something. Mm-hmm.
Most of this is still expect to find nuggets, you know. $5 or $25 nuggets. Well, they pay $1.50 or $2 at the most a pan. And I said, well, now, Lark, if they were going to find those kind of nuggets, they wouldn't have any panners on the property.
Is that salted? Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Mind you, there is colors, but I think they added it.
Well, if I ran one of those operations at one time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't salt it, everybody doesn't get gold.
That's right.
And if everybody doesn't get gold, they're not happy. So you have some ground that the ground has pay in it. But to expect to get what they expect to get,
you wouldn't be having panning operation, you'd have a mining operation, so therefore you have to add, sweeten it up a little bit. Everybody has to get gold. That's where the lure is finding it. That's what service said.
I remember in Fairbanks one time, there was a dignitary came to town. Several of the mining engineers, my husband is a graduate mining engineer, decided that he had to go pan some gold, so they went down to J. Vic Brown Jewelry and bought a $15 nugget. And they went out to this creek, and I was there. Everybody was waiting for him to wash it over in the creek, lose it, but he didn't, he found it. And he really thought he'd found it.
Well, sure, it's a...
But it was a big, it was a nugget.
Mm-hmm. I know, I still get a thrill out of panning on ground that I don't we know when I see anything in there. That's tremendous.
That's the metal.
Never
metal.
Leaves you.
Me and George made him a ring, and you could hear him all over town.
I've found, I have had a ground where I could pan an ounce in about, in three pans.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite an ounce. Boy, I thought I had it made. And the whole thing, bloody thing was worked, except just this little
just
pillar
that
I...
Yeah, sure.
But one little pocket, you can get a couple of $1,000 in up on Bonanza Creek, you know. Doesn't have to be very big.
Yeah, they really haul it out of there. Mm-hmm.
But gold mining is no different than classic gold mining. It's always more money spent. Much more money spent getting the gold out in the aggregate than the gold that they take out. The gold rush they spent, they estimated in Seattle and Victoria and Vancouver that the outfit has spent about $60 million just getting up here.
Mm-hmm.
And it took quite a while before they dug out that $60 million.
I mean,
and a lot of them didn't even see any of it.
That's right.
Gold is, that was only 16.
I have a record I have to play you that I made a number of years ago. Did you ever hear that?
No.
Klondike Stampede? Oh.
Is it, do you sell it commercially?
Sure. I'll play you one side of it. There are two sides. One is about the Klondike Stampede, how the gold miners came up here. I think mm-hmm. you know that story quite well. Mm-hmm. The other one is stories about different personages that were in the Yukon in the early days, and they were well-known characters, and it's called Saints and Sinners. It gives the story of Father Judge.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we get through this tape, yes, I'll
shop?
Play it for you. You can listen to it.
I'd like to buy that for the historical
society. I know it by heart now.
Yeah, I would. No, I haven't. I think I saw that. Do you have it in the shop? I saw that down there. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you were talking about that.
But and the one I have is the one that you have the picture slides.
That's right.
Is that the same one?
That's the same one, but the one you have, has it got a story on the other side? See, later,
so.
I made it as a single
no,
side, but
no.
I shut that off.